Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gents, welcome back into your headphones, into your ears, into your musical brains. Yes, it is Rob DeBank with the A to Z of festivals. And one of my favourite ever people in the world is here, live nice. In the podcast studio. It is, of course, the mighty Chris Tofu, MBE. Can't forget the MBE. Did you sort of make taxi drives and stuff call you Chris Tofu MBE?
It's most blags ever.
Yeah.
Basically.
What does it get you in life?
Absolutely nothing. Nothing at all.
What did you do to deserve that?
Well, you know, Rob, we've done millions of gigs with you, of course, and we love your work, but we've been doing that at Global Local, remember, you know, which is world music, where world music meets 21st century UK culture. So we've been running that thing with the Arts Council for over 10 years now. We put hundreds of bands on 17 stages a year.
I was only pulling your leg, mate. You don't need to really justify it.
No, I need to now. So, yes, mainly for Arts Council, unlike Norman Jay, of course, who's got an MBE for actually DJing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I know. No, I mean, you actually should have been knighted and be Sir Chris of Tofu, the original Vibes controller. And, I think that's just the first of the accolades that you're going to get in your life. And the photo of you outside. Buckingham Palace is brilliant.
Yeah,
did you actually get to meet the Queen?
No, I got to meet William.
Oh, yeah. Prince William.
Prince William.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's like Will, obviously.
Yeah, big Willie Styles. Can you say that about the future king? Probably.
Is that the future king?
Probably not.
Right, okay.
I don't know. I think apparently it might be. Okay, Chris. So, I'm really chuffed that we've got you on. For people that aren't familiar with Chris's work, then, you know, you name it, from Glastonbury to Boomtown, through a few of our festivals, Secret Garden, through his Global Local stuff, through DJing, putting on amazing parties, charity stuff. Chris is right there at the kind of beating heart of the UK left field season. We're going to kick off with a few little true or falses just to get us warmed up,
okay,
Chris, if that's all right.
Okay.
You spent last weekend in a 14th century castle drinking whiskey. True or false?
True-ish. It was a 14th century manor house, but yeah.
Okay. So why?
I was at the amazing Knockangorrig Festival in Scotland, which I've wanted to go to for years because of its alternative roots. But the main reason why Knockangorrig's famous is because the audience goes absolutely nuts, caravanserai style, for anything. Had to be seen, and I'd known for at least 20 years that was the place to go.
Okay, how long did it take you to learn how to pronounce Knockangorrig?
Knockangorrig. It took a long time. I've been in, like, sending bands up there forever, and every band's ever come back going, oh my God, this festival was insane. For the first note, the audience was jumping like maniacs. So I was like, I'm going.
Right, we'll check that one out. We'll add that to the list of the A to Z festivals.
Definitely.
Right, true or false, your favourite word is vibe.
Vibe is my actual main job title. Yeah, vibe engineer, if you want to have the long title there, Rob.
Vibe engineer, vibe controller,
exactly.
He is it.
Yeah.
Okay, true or false, you tour the UK's festivals in a bongo van.
Yeah. is true.
Tell us about your mighty bongo, because I love when Chris turns up to any festival, not just ours, but he turns up with this. It's kind of like a miniature camper van, isn't it? And it's got everything that you need in it for your festival life.
Yeah, a bed.
Has it got a name?
No.
No, just bongo. Yeah, bongo. Is it a bongo friendly, or is it just...
It's a bongo friendly. Yeah, I know you've looked into this clearly.
No, I know loads of people with them. There's a bongo stockist on the Isle of Wight who just sells bongos.
Is that?
Yeah.
Bongos are the perfect festival vehicle. One, they're four-wheel drive. Two, the roof goes up so you can fill the whole van with junk and still get into the roof and have a nice sleep. Three, it's got a little power socket up there.
Four.
And you can escape. Four, you can escape. You can be anywhere in the whole world and people don't even realise you're crashing out of it while they're telling you some band's turned up and no tickets. Yeah.
And I think when we've been tight at one of our shows and not giving you your own dressing room or office, you've actually run your entire operation out of your bongo friendly.
I really like to run the office out of the bongo friendly.
I'm sure I've had bits of toast and stuff out of the toast.
Because you can smoke in there as well.
Bonus. Okay, true or false, you used to play in a band called the Tofu Love Frogs.
Absolutely true.
You said, I will only play in a band if it's called the Tofu Love Frogs.
Absolutely true, yeah. And strangely enough, someone said, I want to play in a band called Tofu Love Frogs. So I was like, I mean.
And any sort of sign of Tofu Love Frogs coming back this year?
No. Not by me. I'm beyond that now. I'm a DJ. I really enjoy not being in a band. I really enjoy just being a DJ, rocking up, doing those sort of things as well. You know, it's much easier and less complex. But the Tofus, if they were still going, would not still be going. We would all be dead, basically, from alcoholic poisoning.
Okay. Well, let's get on to your kind of festival history. So one of the questions I always ask at the beginning of this is, you know, I know that we're talking about more than festivals because you do a lot more, but when we're just focusing on your sort of career in festivals, what was the first festival that you went to as a punter?
There was like Elephant Fair, actually, which was in Cornwall when I was like about 17. I actually got a job from the Dole to go down there as part of a volunteer scheme from the local unemployment centre.
It's very forward thinking of them.
Very forward thinking about it, really, seeing as everybody went down there, they lost their stuff and didn't come back for like 2 weeks.
What was your job?
Well, funny enough, they sort of like handed you out, and my job was to help these guys run something called the Pleasure Dome, which was a crazy sauna full of naked hippies. So it was a pretty good look for the first job, basically.
Man, why didn't I get my first job?
Yeah, amazing.
Mine was serving chips in a secondary school.
Amazing. And at the time, there was Glastonbury took some years off, maybe 4 or 5 years. And Elephant Fair filled that hole. And also filled that hole artistically as well, because they did loads of sight art and really clever stuff. It's at Port Elliot now, of course.
Yeah.
The Port Elliot Festival.
But. So a lot of people talk about Elephant Fair and Glastonbury in the same kind of breath.
No,
what is the actual connection?
Well, for starters, I think the actual connection down there between the two festivals was that there was a load of art people doing art down there, same people up there, similar sort of lineups, acoustic tents, stuff like that. And I think, you know, the rich people, the lords and ladies of Glastonbury were like the lords and ladies of Bath, and the rich landowners of like Somerset, you know, they all hung out together. So I think it was a bit similar like that. But definitely artistically, you know, like in terms of venues and art and built sculptures, it was also running along those lines as well, which is something that came up later.
So walking through the gates of your first Elephant Fair as a someone being sent down from the job centre, what were you thinking? Like, were you just like, this is the life
for
me?
Yeah, I was like, holy shamoli, do people actually live like this? And then when it came to the naked sauna, it was like, oh my Christ, it was amazing. People were passing stuff around in the baths and floating ashtrays, and it was like heaven.
Utopia.
It was like utopia, basically.
And I think that is, you know, as festival promoters or DJs or just people that, you know, regular people that go to festivals, that is a lot of people's first experience, isn't it, of a cool festival. You go in and you're like, I never want to leave here because this is like how I want to live my life.
Yeah, I think, you know, they call them temporary autonomous zones across the world, or temporary paradises, if you like, where you know, daily foibles are given a complete break, you know, where you can be yourself, something different, people react to each other, walls have come down. It's amazing.
So I mean, that kind of, yeah, that kind of answers the next question. What is it about festivals that is so special? So for you, it's about escaping daily life and being able to...
Yeah, well, it's kind of like that, you know, coming to a society where people, you know, look after each other and it is one big throbbing family.
Yeah.
For the punters, you know, oh, I can't get my tent peg in. Oh, yeah, some guy come along, give him a hand straight away. For the bands, it's like everybody's trying to support them if something's going wrong.
And do you think
for us, we have a throbbing network of people who we all love to get involved and stuff like that.
And do you think you know, in 2019 that is still there, the soul of those, you know, the festival scene is still there?
Well, I don't want to take too much time on your A to Z of festivals, but basically here's the deal. I was in Sicily and I came across this big old ruined amphitheatre, and I was down at the back of the amphitheatre. And they said, oh, changing room, backstage changing, 1,500-year-old festival organiser's office, which is actually pretty much written on it, production office, and all this. And then I began to begin looking into it a little bit more deeply. And the realisation is that actually festivals have been a part of humanity for thousands of years. The Victorians managed to have loads of festivals. Glastonbury had a festival of 100,000 people in Victorian days, probably not very well known, not important in the town, to do with religion and King Arthur and all this. But something happened during the First and Second World Wars when we decided to kill everybody that wiped all of that out. And then back in the 60s, people started that up again. But I think there's a certain human behaviour that comes out when these festivals happen. Certainly Stonehenge was an original festival site. People went to those places. You know, you could still see an island in some places like Rose of Tralee, how people use those festivals, which is Rose of Tralee is like, they have like matchmakers. You go to the festival with your daughter or your son and there's a matchmaker, you take them to the matchmaker and they'll meet other people who come in, all these other farmers and stuff like that, you know, so...
Wow, that's how I can get rid of all my sons.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's all about, like, people getting off with each other as well. It's about new boundaries. It's about leaving the family behind. It's about, you know, leaving home first time and stuff like that, you know, so there's an extremely powerful psycho and sociological situation going on that I think, you know, got reborn in the 60s, got lost in the 40 years before it, because everybody was on war. And,
so it's, know, like a rite of passage, but also a kind of pagan need in us to get out in the field.
Been there the whole time. It's in the DNA of humanity. Go to any country in the whole world and you'll find the same, you know.
So why do you think it was only, I mean, it was only really maybe, you know, 20, 25 years ago that the whole second wave, or even, you know, more recently, you know, when we started Best of All 15 years ago, there were, you know, there were probably
like four or five other gigs.
Well, yeah, less than 10 big ones. And so, you know, there has been this massive explosion in the last sort of 10, 15 years. What do you put that down to?
Well, for starters, it was all going on before then, big time. From the 60s, the Albion Fairs, Peace Convoy was just basically, you know, 2,000 people in one roadblock moving around, stuff like that. Last 10, 15 years, you know, there's always been this juxtaposition of people doing things for free and vibiness meets, you know, like capitalism, you know. So in the last 10 or 15 years, just before, after you guys got into it, actually, and we've all suffered from it as well, there was never a festival estate agency. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't property. It wasn't something you could buy or sell. They'd be like, I actually remember when you guys first started all your things, people were like, why are you doing this? What the freaking hell is this? No one makes any money from this. I mean, actually, nobody makes any money from it now. But, you know, these whole other things came in, so it became a much more of a in the mainstream look. You know, Glastonbury, 20 years ago, the headlines of Glastonbury was like, mud, monster, crusty, rubbish. Enemy was scathing about Glastonbury. Scathing, didn't matter who was playing, what bands that they loved. It was just like, let's send our journalists down to Glastonbury to say how awful it is. Do you know what I mean? And how much we hate festivals, and it's all about the mud. And then slowly, I think, you know, I say idiots in the press like that began to see, actually, this is like something going on here. The kids get, this is the kids' rite of passage. This is more important than saying everybody's just a mud monster, because they couldn't be asked to leave their backstage area. Do you know what I mean?
I knew you'd come on here and tell the truth, Chris.
No, it's the truth.
I mean, let's talk about Glastonbury, because I can't remember exactly where we met, but you know, you are synonymous with kind of Shangri-La, Las Vegas,
yeah,
the whole beating left
Holy
field.
Shit, I'm in like year 30 this year.
Are you year 30? Mm. I mean, okay, so tell us about what your relationship is with Glastonbury, what you do there currently, what, you know, what you've done.
So in the beginning we went with, well, we've been a few times. In fact, again, the second gig I went to was Glastonbury, again with school, funny enough, with the college. They had a teacher there who was teaching like philosophy, was running trips there. When, and it was like, you know, only half came back. But when I got the Tuffy Love Shrugs together, we were obsessed with Glastonbury. I mean, and nobody else was. Hardly, we went to Glastonbury, brought in all our stuff underneath the fence, until the guy who was running the gate was like, I don't know why you want to take it under there, just bring it through here. Like amplifiers and shovels and shit. And then we turned out to be the only blagging band on site. So you imagine it, Robbie, there's no other band looking for another gig apart from us. So like stage two, a band dropped out. And they were like, oh my God, can you do this gig? And we were like, yeah. And that happened for like 2 years ago. We were the only guys. And then we started running a stage there with this woman called Kaz from the Kaz Bar, who Joe Strummer used to go down there and go, hey, I'm from the Kaz Bar, give me a free drink. And they were like, no, piss off. Do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. So then that went on and on. And of course, there was this whole thing going on called Travellers. And we were involved in that big time, doing free festival stages all over England.
Mm.
Helicopters, you know, you name it, like pissing a lot of people off in many ways, but also turning on like hundreds of thousands.
So this is a sort of early 90s, Travellers, Stonehenge.
Yeah, all of that Mutoid stuff Waste was going down. Yeah, Mutoid Waste was the first thing in Glastonbury. They did their drumming thing with a big truck, which was like pre-revolutionary. At the same time, we were doing a little stage. Then,
so this, I mean, just for people that are, you know, maybe younger people and people that are tuning in that aren't Glastonbury sort of aficionados, then, you know, talking to Michael Eves about this was like pitch battles, people throwing like burnings, railway sleepers into his front garden, you know, it was kind of like,
it was
quite anarchic and quite a feisty place.
Absolutely awfully bad vibes. And because we'd already gone into Glastonbury and done all that stuff and was running our own little stages and stuff, we were in love with the place anyway, so we didn't actually go around. But you have to imagine that, you know, the last Stonehenge that actually happened, there was 100,000 people there with no frigging toilets. You know, people walking into the woods, coming out with branches that were still living and to make fires with. And like, it was like crazy posses hitting it from the north of England, dealing drugs and Hell's Angels on the main strip when he went in. It was chaos. And then when the police stopped that, Margaret Thatcher, same time as miners' strike, decided to stop Stonehenge happening. It was like absolute violence on a crazy scale. Police attacking a vehicle, smashing the windows with their truncheons, dragging children out through it, cutting people. It was horrible. It was truly a horrible thing. And then Eavis, being a Christian, decided, I can't remember what the year was, but he decided that he was going to give a lump of his land to the Travellers. And a lot of those Travellers, we were like, wow, that's amazing. The first time round, he gave a load of money and told them to go and get another site, and the guy that gave the money to done a runner.
Oh, no.
Which is really rude. You know, it was all this sort of like, Eavis opens the door up, but a lot of people were also slagging it off, calling people weekenders because they spent 5 days on the road rather than three. It was all stuff like that happened. And then we had this little stage off the back of the Tuffy Love Frogs truck, and we went up into this field. We turned up and we didn't have tickets that year, but the guy in the gate was like, we were like with Tuffy Love Frogs. He's like, oh, right, Tuffy Love Frogs, right, follow me. And we followed this Land Rover and they plonked us into this field, you know, like no... I don't even know if it's official. I don't know how it happened, or I don't want to get anyone into trouble because it's so long ago, like 30 years ago or something like that. But anyway, we set up a stage. And then, yeah, it all started going off from there. And then there's this guy Roy was running the bar, and then at the same time there was all this, like I said earlier, crazy press about travellers, like really racist stuff.
Mm.
I mean, if we'd have been of another colour, they would have been banged up to rights, you know, the great unwashed, all this crap. And then what happened then was that Roy did the bar, and then we did a little stage, and then Gideon and all that crew who does Buck Nine and all that came in, and they did like first funny places where blokes dressed as women, and they were like, you know, people did different things, sort of like the vague beginnings of burlesque.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember how the decision was made, but everybody decided with Roy and all that, but we all decided that we wanted to do this thing that we were being called like total like crusties and all this stuff. We were going to turn that around and turn it on its head. So we created this massive casino. What you could only get in if you had a suit or a dress on, you know. And this was revolutionary for the UK festival scene. People were like, what the hell? You mean you don't have to dress in some combat trousers and, you know, you don't have to look like you've just come off some dodgy motorbike? You know, it was kind of like the fashion of the time was like just military, boring. Anybody who wore anything that wasn't military or boring got the piss taken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Me and Josie had our 30th birthday dressed in ball gowns and dinner jackets in the restaurant in the back of that with all our friends who had about an hour's sleep, and we were like, what are we doing sitting here in ball gowns?
Yeah.
I remember that as a turning point, and I mean that was the whole, well, you know, before that, but also that birth of what
you said. Yeah, that's right. It kicked it off for everyone, and then we had like the amazing ballroom, you know, we put chandeliers in it, you know, so we'd gone literally from pallets on the ground to chandeliers in this ballroom, and then
so that was to try and stop people calling people crusties. Yeah, it was like,
screw you, we're sick of being like, you know, getting this kind of internalised inferiority complex.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? We're going to swing that on its head. And of course that was super popular. People were like queuing up for ages. Evis loved it. Evis actually in the end gave us some budget to do that whole field and stuff like that to Roy, and then the next thing was like, yo, now we're going to have speakeasies, now we're going to have like a barber shop where you sit on the barber's chair and then the whole chair disappears down a little railway track and then you end up in a backstage bar drinking whiskey or any of these crazy things that came along, you know. That crew who we're doing that with, you know, Kay Laundretta is now Kay runs Shangri-La. Roy's thing went off. Gideon did the decal really well. Now he does Block Nine.
Mm.
Stevie Bedlam. All these people are involved in it. They're doing really great things now, especially with Thing and then Boomtown. And they did it like 100 times out. And then we did. Roy went so far, but because everybody was like out of. No one was used to success in the normal sense. Continental Drift had started by then. But nobody was really used to the success of it. There was no such thing, and nobody knew what contract even looked like. So it exploded.
It did. And people love hearing about, you know, dealing with Michael. We'll get off Glastonbury in a minute, but I love talking about Glastonbury, if you hadn't noticed. And so, you know, there was obviously a period where Michael was kind of battling this sort of tide of anarchy really and stuff, and then it settled down into, you know, everyone working together. But, you know, he has to, and now Emily has to, you know, they're controlling 30 or whatever different areas with amazing, all the chiefs
So
how often do you sort of go down and see those guys, and how does that work? Do you sit around the kitchen table with Michael and kind of go, well, this is...
I always been kind of shy of those guys, personally. I try, don't really see a lot of them in a year. I might see them 3 or 4 times, but... Kay and Robin, my directors of Shangri-La, who we do it with as well, we've now got an office in Shepton Mallet. They kind of see them quite a lot, really.
Yeah.
Kay's really onto this, like, you know, bigging up the women thing and the environmental thing as well, and so is Emily. So they kind of see each other a little bit more. But, you know, back in the day, it was like only Roy saw them.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This is Rob DeBanks A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. So what is your favourite ever thing that you've seen at Glastonbury? Or the favourite ever thing that you've put on or seen?
People
either?
Ask me, there's just so much stuff that's gone down on so many different levels, it's almost impossible to answer.
What's the thing you're proudest of having done at Glastonbury? I'm going to come back to that because you've had a heavy weekend.
I like Napalm Death last year.
There you go.
It always just comes back to like a year before.
There you go. Yeah, well, that's great. So, yeah, you had Napalm Death.
And then we had Roger from The Beat, and The Beat came and played, and that made them go off from when they hadn't been going off for a while. And that was an incredible gig. You know, where the atmosphere, you know, you'd be like 1 degree better or worse on 100 of gigs. It's about creating that vibe, isn't it? I'd say where it went off, when the most dust was rising from people dancing. That's what I remember.
How do you get any sleep at Glastonbury? Because I'm up, and I really struggle to sort of sleep past about 7 a.m. So
yeah,
for you guys,
too.
When you walk around Shangri-La, it's totally dead in the morning or afternoon. I'm always up there kind of going, right, come on, let's find the fun. And
yeah, we're running all day now, every day.
Okay, you're running in the day.
Yeah,
as well.
It's like Craig Charles, Norman Jay, and like a whole bunch of like brilliant stuff on Sunday as well.
So
what it is, the golden rule of all festivals, golden rule, hands down, power naps in the afternoon.
Is that what it is?
It has to happen. It happens in Europe. People have this, what do you call it, siesta, because of that very main reason, you know.
What, because they're going at it hard at festivals the rest of the time?
No, people in Europe are staying up. They're still up at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They get five hours sleep there, and then 2 p.m. or 3.
What's the curfew like at Glastonbury these days? Is there like a police, a noise police guy coming around going, right, it's 6 a.m, turn it off?
Yeah, otherwise it wouldn't turn up.
And is there a fight, you know, is there an argy-bargy at that point, or is it like...
Yeah, it's culture versus production, Robbie. You've been down that road a million times, isn't it? If it was left to me, we would not stop. And I don't think my people would want to stop.
No, okay.
You know.
All right, cool. Well, you're a man with many strings to your bow, you know. Glastonbury, if you're going to Glastonbury this year, make sure you go down
Shangri-La.
And find Chris either DJing or running stuff or having a siesta. Go and knock on the window
the
of the Bongo Friendy and wake him up. But I mean, Continental Drifts, let's talk about that. That's your sort of talent agency and booking. So you've got Global Local. These are all things that you're kind of doing, a lot of community based projects in a way.
I want to talk to you about
like the Deaf Rave. Tell us about
that. So Continental Drifts is over 20 years old now, and it's a company with me and three other business partners, and we organise concerts for 2 million people a year, but mainly community. When we first started Continental Drifts, I mean, you know, we've been doing all this festival stuff for years, But we're also really dedicated to free urban community events, because we were all squatters, and we did start that whole shebang with this 55,000 people festival called Hackney Homeless Festival before Hackney was hip, and there was tons of empties there. There was over 12,000 empty spaces in East London, or Hackney if you like. And
they're all about £2 million and
now, oh my god. But yeah, so we started all that stuff off, and we ran these enormous festivals there, and we ended up also, because I was in Toffee Love Frogs running stages as well, I was the only guy. When we first started Connell Driss as an agency as well, as a music agency, there was no one. No one at all. There was just your Babylonia, obviously. I won't mention any names, but they're still Babylon right now. And they're still rinsing you and everyone else. And there was just them and us. There was no one else. And luckily now, you know, a few more peeps are coming along, like Diplomats, like just loads of little smaller agencies to deal with this. But there was no one dealing with literally a whole generation of culture untouched.
Yeah, I mean, if you're there at home listening to this and you Google Continental Drift and look at the lineups that are on their roster, it's, you know, it's like every band that you'd want on your festival, and they're not all big names, or a lot of them aren't big names at all, but they are the sort of vibe masters, to Nick Chris's word, and the ones that get everyone going at festivals.
That's what people are talking about quite often after they've gone home. It's like, holy cow, did you see that brass band doing friggin' Daft Punk? I ended up dancing in a conga with them and like meeting the whole band, and then we went off and met it. You know, it's about people being able to touch the vibe, getting more involved with it at a lower level, what we call off main stage.
Off main stage, yeah. That's what we love. And I mean, you're the sort of king of mixing up the genres as well. You know, you're largely responsible behind the whole vintage remix
thing that's going off
and now gone into the mainstream big time. And
although I haven't, strangely enough,
your time is coming. And like you said, you know, brass band remix. I mean, you've invented whole sort of genres of this. Yeah. Where you can do whole days at festivals.
We have to do that.
So tell us, I mean, obviously we work together on Bestwell and Camp Bestwell, and tell us about some of those things that you've done where, you know, you've had a whole day of brass bands or...
Yeah, well, for instance, the brass band thing's been... That's a great example, Robbie. The thing is, was, we know that brass has got so much soul, it lifts people off their feet at a festival, right? We know that. We know it kills it like that, whether that's in a band with brass in or just on its own. And then there was no frigging brass bands. It was like two in the whole of England that actually did anything alternative apart from coal mining ones. And then we were like, oh my God, this is what gets people going really crazy. And then we added them into the agency. Right now, in the year, whatever it is, there's at least 40 brass bands of an alternative nature doing really crazy things that will drive an audience insane.
That's
in like 5 or 10 years. So what the hell's going to happen?
So what's the next thing then? You know, electro swing, vintage remix, brass bands. Where you've done the death metal, thrash metal, Napalm Death.
I think it's actually like
something gentle.
For me, it's like music paired together with dance and film to give you more of a 360 degrees feeling of stuff.
Okay.
Like at you guys, I'll be like pushing hard for next year. It's going to be like sort of like, we're going to be loads of brilliant Arabic bands that remix. There's no Arabic music in the UK at a festival. Probably in the whole year you might find one or two bands, but we're like, oh my God, but when you put Arabic with dancing, with the audience dancing, with the films from the 1930s remixed, Arabic nature and stuff like that, to create this kind of souk vibe, that would just be one tiny little thing that we're bringing forward. We're doing this thing around the world in 80 tunes, which is where we have like 1 hour of like Indian DJs with Indian dancers, 1 hour of Latin DJs, Latin dancers, film, blah, blah, stuff like that. You know, I think it's really,
we're going to have to erase all this part immediate of the podcast so no one else steals your ideas. tell us about Def Rave.
So yesterday we did Def Rave's first proper festival with Inside of All Points East. So Def Rave, for instance, is a really frigging cool thing. It's like the deaf community for years, just like the mental health community and all that, has always had like all these non-deaf people or in mental health psychiatrists or whatever telling people what to do. So the deaf community have put together their own thing, and they have raves, DJs, sign language MCs.
So how does that work?
Comedians.
You know, talking like a Dumbo, but like, how does that work in terms of, you know, if they're deaf with the music, is it they feel it or?
Yeah, what it is with deaf music is, one, it needs a shitload of bass. So what we've been trying to do, and we actually haven't done it this year, but we will do next year, is create vibrating stages. They actually hold balloons, weirdly enough, up in front of speakers, you know, and the balloon vibrates and they get it. They also, there's no music if they can't hear all thing, that, but they're actually doing deaf rapping. Do you see what I mean? Or deaf comedians, sort of sign language comedians, sign language rappers, stuff like that. Getz has taken one on tour with him, which is really nice.
Oh, that's wicked.
And yeah, generally thing like that. But also the main thing is to create a space where all deaf people can hang out together and feel like they're on the same freaking planet as each other, you know, which is kind of really important, you know.
That's amazing. So where's the next one of those going to be, do you know? Or just watch this space.
Watch this space, but the Arts Council's been really good. It's given Def Rave a load of money to go and do touring and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a growing thing. It's gentle.
Okay. Tell us about yours and mine favourite venue in the world, Caravanserai.
I mean, basically, the number one greatest machine for creating a festival vibe ever built anywhere is Caravanserai. It's yet to be beaten, and I say this with respect to the people who built Shangri-La, which has got over 20 different art areas and stuff like that. Boomtown, who, you know, same people, you know, they've got like,
leading
you know,
the field,
towns,
yeah, for sure.
Blah blah blah. Caravanserai is built by Pete Bateman, just this incredible artist. It's kind of it's like a fairground circus remixed. Do you know what I mean? We're using all those old structures. It's got all these caravans that it uses.
Yeah, so
it's in a stockade. It's like an instant super vibe, and that is just the best thing. And Rob and Josie, you know, they like commissioned it. Josie, who is like often not given the big ups that I think she should get.
Because I tend to take all the praise and stick.
Yeah,
it in the
background. Yeah, you want to come to my office, buddy?
And you obviously have worked with Pete over the years, but programming that and shaping the whole way. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you approach it. It's like a helter-skelter meets an old French caravan meets bandstand, all sort of melded into one, isn't it? And this sort of
it's welded into one, but also it's important to remember the history of these things. You know, the fairground is the original festival, and that's been going on for hundreds of years. Gypsies used to run the fairgrounds because they used to suddenly turn up with these crazy things like electric light, luminescence, stuff like that. So he's built all of that into it. So you kind of like, I always think fairground as festival is a really, really, really great way for people to feel relaxed and have a great time and get vibey. Pete's got over 470 different pieces of art rammed in there.
Wow.
And the way it works is it's like a stockade. So you just can't, once that door's shut, you ain't getting in. So people really get that feeling that the FOMO.
So much so that you broke the stage last year. You should be proud of that, not embarrassed. Came out on the radio, Chris Topher has broken the stage.
Shut
down. Okay.
It was only an inch off the floor.
I mean, Chris,
if we'll break it again this year.
we have to do part two of this because there's too much to share in your festival history. But you know, just briefly tell us what you think the future of festivals currently looks like. You know, you're feeling optimistic, feeling good about that?
Well, it's really hard to see, isn't it, really? It's quite hard to work it out. For on one side, the commercial festivals, and although, you know, festivals always trod this great path between the both sides and stuff like that, and all of them are, the commercial festivals are all chasing these friggin' headliners that are getting less and less and less with more and more money, and some of them are friggin' boring. I'm not going to mention any names on festivals this year, but some of our favourite festivals have really dull lineups because they have to keep playing this game, you know what I'm saying? And actually, for me and you, obviously, we're about off main stage. And in fact, the festivals that are really successful these days are the ones that specialise in off main stage. That's what people remember, that's what people talk about, not whatever the main act is. It is a juxtaposition and it is important, but off main stage it's like the people who spend more time, more energy in creating artistic things that people talk about and remember when they came back are often the ones that are going to succeed. And I'm seeing that. I'm seeing that all over the frigging place, basically, which is great. It's a very great thing. It's positive, but...
Wise words from Chris Tofu. Yeah. And the good news is, you know, whilst those festivals might stagnate in that, then there's a whole raft of new exciting festivals like you're talking about that are coming through and not worrying about...
People were like, this market is full 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean? And it's not true. Someone will come along and make a...
Oh, there's so many
festival of air, festival of bread, festival of tea.
I'm having that. Bread festival, watch this
Tea-topia.
Space.
Teatopia.
Me and Chris Topia in the Bongo Friendly Teatopia. Here we come. Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for joining us out of your busy festival schedule. Where can people come and watch you this summer?
DJ Chris Tofu, you can find at...
on social media.
Next week, Isle of Wight. I'm DJing a crew party on Saturday night in Shangri-La.
There we go.
A month before the festivals began.
So how many actual days are you going to be on site at Glastonbury?
I'm only there for about a week because I had to do all the laminating and all the bloody office stuff as well. You
so
know,
you're in the office sweating over the photocopier.
Yes, exactly.
So, getting my passes ready.
Yeah, your passes ready. Roll the bank Saturday night on the biggest stage, gas tower, 360-degree sound system.
Really?
Serious visuals.
God, you're getting me nervous now.
Yeah, 3D sound.
Wow, can't wait.
Guy from Radiohead's on after.
Really?
He's used to that, Rob the Bank.
High five. Thank you very much. To be continued.
Yeah, Rob the Bank, I need to do your one.
Watch this space. This is Rob the Bank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.